Today, this is the first ever, for me, Bumper Sticker Sunday Talks. And it was triggered the other day when we were driving in the car, because the car next to me had a small sign on the back of it, and it said, "Wag more, bark less." In the car with me were my wife, Marianne, and our 11-pound toy poodle, Nikki. And so we were driving home after having been shopping. And because Nikki has often modeled that idea of wag more, bark less, I understood the concept in that term pretty quickly. Wagging of its tail seems to be a way for a dog to signal its happiness, its excitement, its affection, and its acceptance of whatever is in its environment. Barking seems to have a whole bunch of different meanings. Now, I'm not really that knowledgeable about dogs in that my real experience is only over the last 9+ years with Nikki. Nikki barks out of fear at night. I certainly know that, fear and uncertainty. When I take her out at night before we go to bed, she'll bark at the dark as if to signal her arrival and maybe to provoke a threat or probably to try to scare a threat away by a loud bark. Now, you can imagine an 11-pound dog is not that large physically, so the sound is a way for her to enlarge her presence, her being, if you will. I also noticed that in new and unfamiliar circumstances, she tends to bark, at least initially. One of the challenges that we have a courtyard, and the front door opens out onto the front yard and to the street, and when people walk by our house, either by themselves or ride bikes past us or walk dogs past us, she tends to bark at them, almost as if she's telling them they are intruding upon her territory. Her need for territory is being threatened, is what I interpret that as being. And frankly, to be honest about it, pretty much everything that she sees or can hear or smells seems to be what she views as her territory. So when we go out at night, either in the front yard or the backyard, and those shadows, is that she's not sure what's in the dark, so just as a way of protecting herself, perhaps, or to deal with it, she starts with the barking, but then she gets down to business and her tail is wagging. And that tail wagging situation seems to me to be a result of her getting more information about the environment, almost as if, well, my first impression is it could be threatening, could be dangerous, and that's how I'm going to act. But after a little bit of information processing, I see it's a benign environment. There is no real threat out here, so now I'm okay again. And she goes through this process, and it seems to be that's how she recognizes playthings, that after that initial uh-oh, something new, something unfamiliar, then she is safe and protected, and then she goes back to wagging her tail and in what I would consider to be a higher emotional state, or where she's happy and excited about the prospect of playing with whomever has just entered her space. Nikki is an extremely effective communicator, and it's one of the things I wanted if we were going to have another dog, and this certainly is the characteristic she brought to the table. And I'd recognize this, too, that Marianne and I are very well trained by Nikki. You know, a lot of times people say, my dog is well trained, but it goes two ways in our household. When Nikki wants something, she makes sounds to get our attention. She points at things with her paw, one paw or the other, when she wants something, like a drink out of water, or if she wants something off of a plate, she'll tap it with a paw. So she's pretty clear at telling us what she wants, and that barking is oftentimes when she's focused on what she doesn't want. When she wants to communicate with us sometimes, she's silent. She's neither wagging nor barking. She just stands silently and waits for us to become aware of her presence and her need. And that is oftentimes when she's standing by a door waiting for us to become aware of that, in which case we'll take her outside. if we don't pay attention after a while, then that silence turns into a little bit of audio assistance for us, little noises. And so then it's like, oh yeah, let's tend to her. Sometimes she just stares at us until we get it, and then Svengali-like we obey her and then meet her needs. While it's taken me some time to put these thoughts down, or to think them and to put them down, it didn't take me very long to expand the meaning of that wag more, bark less, to people, not just to dogs. It seems really clear to me that when I look at a few months back when we had an election here in Florida, there were bumper stickers on many different types of vehicles. Some of them were pleasant, some expressing a preference for one candidate or another, or one ballot issue or another, and that was great. However, some bumper stickers were filled with hate and were downright vicious. And if we consider wag more as being an indication of excitement, affection, what we are for, then the positive bumper stickers could be seen as wagging. Fearful bumper stickers that display a lot of ignorance of facts are clearly barking, a primitive strategy that seems to be used by millions for millennia, and now are used in present time, too, to try to make so much noise that whatever we're afraid of will become afraid of us. And you could hear that with talk show hosts, you can hear it with political rallies, you could hear it pretty much anywhere where there's bullying or blabber going on. The barking that Nikki does is due to her canine instincts. The vicious barking that political extremists do is often the result of premeditated incitement by others. People who have communications influence deliberately rile up other people to get them barking, and in some cases, to get them biting. So when you see violence out there, as we've seen, and you can look at it across the spectrum, gay bashing and beating up of minorities, blacks and Hispanics, and all kinds of things of that sort, you just go, somebody has incited these people into going beyond barking into the biting phase and becoming instinctual, kind of like that attack dog mentality. And if you look back in the United States prior to these last couple of elections, some candidates were holding what they call town hall meetings around the country or around the state or whatever area that they were trying to influence. And during that time, we saw something that's kind of unusual here in the U.S., and that was when mobs of ruffians disrupted those meetings with barking and, in some cases, biting the attendees with physical violence. They didn't want to allow communication. They wanted their barking, their noise-making, their disruptive behavior to drown out people trying to speak with voices of reason or to express a point of view. And it is these mobs, like a pack of crazed dogs, that really they were reduced to their lowest possible awareness as thinking human beings. They became more like animals in a pack than they were like a group of human beings displaying a higher human consciousness, as you recognize, and I caught myself as I was about to say that, has an incredible range of expression, to some of the most horrible to some of the most fantastic forms of expression. We create great works of art, and we have created torture chambers and things worse than and better than, and a whole bunch of things in between. Over the last 9 years, my wife Marianne and I have talked about, as a result of watching Nikki in action, writing a book about her, and it was inspired by the series of books, and you probably have seen these over the last 3 or 4 or 5 years, you know, Management Secrets of Attila the Hun, Management Secrets of Genghis Khan, Management Secrets of Jesus Christ, and so on, these points of view that each one of these people had and converted into a pop bestseller. And we were thinking in terms of Nikki because we recognized how effective a manager she was, and we were basically down to the point where let's write this book as if Nikki were writing a book on a dog's secrets to managing people. She certainly is effective at it, and frankly, we wouldn't have it any other way. This, our relationship with her, with just a few exceptions, some of it having to do with barking, actually. Actually, now that I think of it and say that, the only discrepancy we have in our relationship is when she barks at neighbors or what she perceives as a threatening situation that we don't perceive that way. Back then when we were talking about writing this management book from a dog's perspective dealing with humans, I didn't realize that wag more, bark less was one of the most powerful techniques available to a dog, and frankly, for that matter, to human beings. I wasn't familiar with that phrase, and it was the back of that car just recently that presented that information that I became aware of. Wagging the tail in a dog is such an attractive act of bonding that what gets triggered for most people is their natural desire to get closer, to bond with that animal. And we can see that same process, not only with dogs, but with little children that, who are excited and bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and are all kinds of happy. Our natural tendency is to move closer to them, not to separate, but to bond with them. And so I can say that desire to be closer to people and to pets who have this energy is civilizing, that is, make us be able to socially work together better. It's bonding and it's building. It's a building pattern that is good for everybody. Across the pond in my backyard today, there were at least three dogs in another home or in another two homes that were barking intermittently. My interpretation to their barking is that their needs are not being met. Or possibly that the dogs are perceiving that their needs are not being met. Everything could be hunky-dory in reality, but if the dogs are perceiving something other than that, they're expressing that in their barking. A lot of barking in dogs and in human beings is fear-based. It's based in the fear that our needs are not now and will not be met. And so with that anxiety, that energy, that fear, we make noises in one form or another. We can take that energy and put it and direct it at somebody else, which is really placing the blame on somebody else for our needs not being met. Barking turned to vicious biting yesterday in Tucson, Arizona, where I think it was a young white man, it was a white man, my wife told me, who went on a hate-filled killing spree at a supermarket. How did this man get so poisoned that his pain turned to violent rage? How did the environment and experiences in his life get translated into so much pain that the only outlet was his malfunctioning awareness that presented the only alternative to him, which was to massacre people in a crowd? About 12 years ago, Marianne and I were babysitting two of our grandchildren in Las Vegas for a long weekend while our daughter and son-in-law went away for the weekend. They asked me to tell them a story, so I said, okay. I told them that I had in my mind for some time, and I never really had verbalized it to anybody, this story. And I told them a story about a group of children, five of them, who had been taunted and teased by their peers, by their classmates. These are elementary school children in my mind. And those kids became friends because they basically had a common experiences of not fitting in, not belonging, being teased, being taunted, and being made to feel bad about themselves. The story revolves around those distinguishing characteristics that they had. Each of them had one different one than the other, and that they became important strengths as the story unfolded. And ultimately, those characteristics gave them the ability and strengths and skills, if you will, powers that allowed them to save a family from a fire in their home. The story resolves when these characteristics are recognized not only by the children themselves and their families, but by the people they saved, and particularly by their classmates, that recognize that we all have individual characteristics. They can be strengths. Because they're a little bit different doesn't make them bad. And so as their characteristics previously teased about were now recognized as being good, these kids got public acceptance, and the whole story resolved in a happy ending. I think it was about 2 years later that the Columbine Massacre happened. Two boys, taunted and in the pain of not belonging, became twisted emotionally and mentally and expressed their poisonous rage by murdering classmates and teachers. I don't know who was the first to start the barking in that situation or in any situation, but one dog's barking can get a pack of dogs barking. My little dog can get the dogs across the pond barking, and the dogs across the pond can initiate barking that will cause my dog to react with barking. The 6 o'clock news can get many people barking and even biting. Talk show hosts can get dogs barking by their barking. Politicians can get dogs in their constituency barking. And we see this time and time again. And a lot of the people acting out in violence is being incited by other people's setting the stage for that. It seems hopeless sometimes to overcome this human tendency, kind of like dog tendency, to bark and then to bite out of fear, but it's not. Just because others are barking doesn't mean we have to bark. We've had a couple of dogs visit over the holidays, and I can recall a friend of ours coming here with their dog, 4 years old, two or three times bigger than Nikki. And so when Nikki first barked at this dog, the dog just would look at it and ignored it. Didn't respond, didn't react, just walked around sniffing things, to include Nikki, and just kind of wandered around. This was a very peaceful, interested, non-reactive kind of dog. I think we have the same capabilities. Just because others are barking doesn't mean we have to bark. People who are trying to get us to bark are people trying to get us to act from a lower awareness. When we're in the barking phase of activity, we are clearly not in the thinking phase. So these people that are trying to make us do less thinking and act more primitively, less reasoningly, and more instinct-driven, that's not to our best interest, not to our best interest of survival or meeting of our own needs, even though that's often how it's presented. There's a threat over there. We have to kill them. We have the threat over there. We have to kill them. That sort of thing is wholesale manipulation in a lot of cases that we would do well to be wise of. Now, barking is contagious, clearly. You see it in crowds. You see it with people. You see it in mobs. You see it with dogs. But so is wagging. Rejecting is contagious, but so is bonding. The consciousness of a dog is different than ours, but even a dog can make a choice as to how to respond or react to another barking or wagging of a dog, as I saw the other day. And as human beings, we have a far greater responsibility and power to make our own choices. Even when we're told who and what our enemies are, we don't have to join that pack. We can choose for ourselves to bond. We can choose for ourselves to wag. We can know for ourselves that bonding with what we want is the creative act that attracts what we want into our experience. And the more we ponder that, and the more we think about that, and the more we reason about that, the clearer that fact becomes. Bonding with what we want is the creative act that attracts what we want into our experience. And when we learn and really know that, conversely, barking and certainly biting keeps our happiness away. We may have misunderstood, and we may have been trained in this way through our experiences and our upbringing, that says being mean, being aggressive, being rejecting is what will keep us safe. But in fact, magnetically, the opposite is true. I have the image of a person standing at the fork in the road, trying to decide which path to follow. I think this decision, which path to follow, whether we're aware of it or not, happens hundreds of times a day in terms of which thought do I pursue? Which thought do I follow? Which thought do I perpetuate? For those of you who are saying, wow, Tom, I don't have a dog. I don't get the metaphors of wagging and barking and biting. Let me change my languaging. Barking is fear expressed. It's complaining. It's criticism. It's whining. It's seeing the cup as half empty. It's judgment, fault finding. It's a lower vibration behavior. And it's dangerous because magnetically it attracts danger and threats. Barking separates, even if it makes us feel like we're a part of a mob. That mob turns on its own members, as you can see from packs of dogs and sharks in a feeding frenzy. Wagging, on the other hand, is a high vibration enthusiasm. It's love, it's gratitude, it's a desire to be close, to connect. It's happiness, it's acceptance of self and others. It's a desire to be close, to connect, and in a field of generosity. It's compassion. It makes us and others feel safe and protected. It makes the meeting of our needs much easier to accomplish. If our choice of thoughts makes us feel good, we are wagging. And that is what we're looking for. Our choice is to wag or to bark. And on the, like the sign on the back of the car said, wag more, bark less. I think that is the path to the happiness that we're all seeking. I'd like to end this service with a prayer. This is a prayer that comes from letter 8 of Christ's Returns, reveals startling truth, pluralized for this purpose. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know that it is your will that we should be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know that you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.